back when he was still alive. Earl Joe Hendershot was widely regarded as being the meanest, nastiest, vilest, most low-down, no-good, dog-kicking, woman-beating, cop-hating son of a junkyard dog that ever drew breath. And then he died. Behind the wheel of his custom-built kill car, a hillbilly murder machine of the devil's own design. After that, well, Earl Joe got even worse. He came back as a vengeful spirit, touring the length of the dirt track road that runs down the center of the wooded holler called Crooked Neck. Every night, this savage specter challenged anyone he saw to a race. If you won, you lived. But nobody ever won, and nobody ever lived. Not until Lurleen Stokes became the champion of the Crooked Neck and sunk Earl and his kill car into a ghostly grave of her own devising. Which was all well and good for a number of years, until a local teenage gearhead and sociopathic outcast named Shep Sweetly made a little magic of his own. Now Earl Joe was back. The kill car was on a whole new level. But Lurleen was back too. And the dead man wasn't the only one who had leveled up. Under the light of a silvery moon, Lurleen stood at the end of the Crooked Neck, right next to the grave where she had buried him so long ago. It was still broken wide open from his escape, gaping like a hungry mouth, surrounded by police barricades. 100 feet away, with all four tires firmly on the dirt of the Crooked Neck, sat the kill car. The engine revved and relaxed, as if it was breathing. The silhouette behind the wheel stared at her, and Lurleen stared right back. "Not just yet, old-timer," she shouted to him. "But soon." The engine rumbled and growled at her. Inside the cab was a soft, flickering orange, as if the dashboard lights were oozing hellfire. The triple exhaust pipes billowed black brimstone smoke. "You know, I am gonna whip your ass, and I'm gonna fuck up your car. You will never drive again." The engine of the kill car sputtered, chuckling at her. The spikes of its cow catcher glistened in the moonlight, a wet smile. "I'll see you tomorrow night," she said, and got behind the wheel of her own car. She could feel the headlights of the kill car following her, like the eyes of the Mona Lisa. There was nothing for Lurleen like seeing the enemy to get her charged up. She was spoiling for a fight, and now she was freshly energized to get back to work. She had a kill car to build. Drinking moonshine in the holler and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters, and mayhem. Killers, cannibals, and cults. Fearful fiction and furious fact. Tall tales and terrifying truths. This is A Scary Home Companion. True to her word, Lurleen went back out to the same spot every night to stare down Earl Joe, and the ghost was always there waiting for her. As driven as she was, Lurleen was old and wise enough to be patient. Beating him the first time had taken blind luck and personal sacrifice. The next go-round took weeks and months of intense planning. She didn't have that much time, but she still couldn't afford to rush it. The car, most of all, needed work, and it needed a lot of work. Shep Sweetly had started construction of his own kill car, but never got much below the surface. It was far too much work for her to do on her own, on any sort of timeline. Truth told, this car was a life's work type project. So just like the last go-round, Lurleen had to reach out and ask for some help. This wasn't something that came easily to her, but with such big stakes, she couldn't afford to let her ego get in the way of the end goal. So she started to recruit some help. Her name carried clout with the gearheads, and she had the full backing of the sheriff, of course. So she recruited a dozen different old-school mechanics and put them to work, in shifts, four at a time, so that around the clock, someone was always working on the new kill car. Lurleen still double-checked everyone's work, but she had much bigger fish to fry. Getting the car operational was only half the battle. For one thing, she needed a cow catcher, and not just because Earl Joe had one. His was outfitted with spikes, and she wanted something leaner and meaner, designed to cut dead on through metal, like outfitting her grill with a giant scalpel. She took the job to the next holler over, where Andy the Hobbit ran his forge. Andy had done some work for her in the past and was eager to take on this job. He said, give him a month. She said, you have a week. But here's the thing. All the physical stuff, the bars and the roll cage and the blades and the spikes and all that shit, it wasn't nearly enough for this demolition derby. The kill car was tough, but it was also running on hellfire, tuned up by Satan, soaked in black magic. Lurleen needed to drop into reverse and go the opposite direction. She needed to make some magic of her own, just like she did the last time, just like old Leatherstocking had advised her all those years back. What she needed to do was to supersaturate her car with goodness, positivity, and any other crazy New Age bullshit she could think of. She spread the word. She had Tom spread the word. This was bigger than any one of them. This was about Earl Joe. This was about Bedford. This was about making the Crooked Neck and its people safe again. And it didn't take long for the locals to respond. Things started showing up to the garage, either hand-delivered, usually with the story attached, or left on the step out front. Lurleen had asked for luck. She wanted trinkets, totems, charms, little things imbued with prayers and wishes and love and fortune. She could attach these to the dashboard, or in some cases, spot weld them to the car itself, just like she had done to that vehicle in Pierre Narota in the fight against El Horrible. These trinkets came from all over Bedford and in all forms. As expected, there were a fair number of crosses, rosaries, and St. Christopher medals, along with some crystals and interesting rocks. Anything from any religion was welcome, because who knew which one was the right one, grand scheme of things? There was also an antique hand mirror, a pocket watch found buried in a crossroads, and an old man's lucky frog gig. Lurleen was gifted a set of antlers from a 10-point buck that the hunter said had spoken in tongues to him as it died. A young woman donated a couple of items from her late great-grandfather. Lurleen knew this story well. She'd heard it a dozen times, but she let the granddaughter tell it again, just to give her some comfort. She gave Lurleen a cowboy hat lined with squirrel skulls around the band, as well as a little .22-caliber squirrel gun used to kill them all. Her grandfather had been legally blind, but was still the best damn varmint hunter the Holler had ever seen. Bergie came by, fresh out of the hospital after her ordeal in the woods. She gave Lurleen a set of keys and said they came from a dead man's pocket. Weird, but okay, Lurleen wasn't really in a position to turn down something just because it was creepy. This whole damn thing was creepy. That night, Monica called her. And not for any reason, just because it had been a few days and she wanted to check in. Lurleen never would have thought to ask her former, "It's complicated," for help, but since she called and it came up, she ended up telling Monica everything that was going on and what she was planning. And then she asked, "You wouldn't happen to have anything to help me, would you? Help you kill a demonio. It's more of a phantasma, I think. Wait. It's a muy mal phantasma." Monica laughed. "Okay, maybe. I'll ask around and see what I can do. Okay, but make it quick. And hey, Mon, don't ask Lefty. I don't need the DRO sticking its beak in." Monica said, "I have other friends. The last few days, since you left, have been very interesting. I know a lot more than I did. But hey, you know what? The reason I called? Everyone misses you down here, Lurleen. I miss you." "Yeah, me too. Thanks, Mon. I'll call you after." Since Lurleen was already in her feels after that phone call, she decided to make the schlep up to Morgantown and pay a visit to an old ally. Dawn Kresge had been her second in the previous showdown with Earl Joe. Dawn had been fearless, steadfast, brave. Lurleen was trying to avenge Janice at the time, and Dawn was there on account of her late father. But that was then. And now, it turned out that Dawn was running a youth shelter in Morgantown. Off the books, unofficial, very hush-hush, a safe place for gay and trans youth who had nowhere else to go. Dawn greeted Lurleen with open arms. "You look good, girl," Lurleen said. "I'm sure you've heard what's been going on in the neck." Dawn nodded. "Of course. I wish I could help, Lurleen. I do. But I can't. My place is here. I'm doing good work. I'm making a real difference, and I can't risk that. I can't risk the futures of these kids." Of course, Dawn. Just out of respect, I had to come here and ask face to face. But seeing as I'm here already..." She asked if Dawn had anything to donate to the new kill car. Wait, she said. "I've got the perfect thing." She went into her office and came out a few minutes later with something very personal to the both of them. Her father's old silver sheriff's badge. "I think he'd want you to have it. And hey, Lurleen, if you see Dad out there? Give it back to him, okay? Dawn said, wistful, but not tearful. When Lurleen got back to Bedford, she went right to the end of the Crooked Neck, where Earl Joe was waiting for her. Not tonight, you old bastard, she said. And although she didn't realize it, she was smiling.
Hold the flashlight under your chin, closer as the lights dim. You lonely dog, you lucky dog. You lonely dog, you lucky dog. You free fall down to the living room, closer as the lights dim.
The new kill car was coming along like gangbusters. Some of the gearheads working on it were the same ones who taught Lurleen everything she knew back when she was a kid. Nobody cut any corners. They were all well aware this had to be dead solid perfect. Lurleen came in one afternoon and found that her cousin, Sheriff Tom Kendo Jr., had given the gearheads the afternoon off. He was doing a different kind of work, and had brought in a local artist to paint the exterior of the kill car. It was a pretty girl, late teens, hair tied back in a messy tail as she worked. The girl had already covered both sides of the car with various religious symbols, a cross, a Dharma wheel, the crescent and star, an Aum, a Kanda, the nine-pointed star, a Star of David, a few other stars that Lurleen didn't recognize. And now the girl was working on the top of the car. The hood had been painted pure Americana, red, white, and blue stripes that expanded into a rainbow across the top of the roof. The girl was even painting the spikes and saw blades to match the stripes. That's Shep's sister, Tweet. She wanted to help after what her brother did. Lurleen nodded, then said, wait, her name is Tweet Sweetly? Yeah. Well, how about that? Yeah. After Tweet left, Lurleen asked Tom, have you noticed Bergie acting funny ever since? I have, he said. And the thing with gas cans especially. But age of consent in West Virginia and all. Not much I can do about that. I know. Still. Seems funny, don't it? It does, he confirmed. Their conversation was derailed when the rolling door to the bay opened, sliding slowly into the ceiling. They thought it was the gearheads returning to work, but instead they saw three strangers. Two Latina women, dressed in jumpsuits and work gloves like they were ready for a shift, and behind them, standing with his back to the garage, was a priest. He was bald, and inked onto the back of his scalp, reaching down below his white collar, was a black-and-white portrait of a dead snake draped across a stone crucifix. "Friends of yours?" Tom asked. "Yes," the priest answered, and turned to face them. "If this is Lurleen Stokes, then we are your friends. We have many people in Pierre and Rota. They tell us how you fought with them against the snakes. When I was told you needed a special kind of help, I came here as quickly as I could." He extended his hand, and Lurleen shook it. Father Juan Luis Cabral, at your service. These are my associates, Natividad and Maritza, Cazadores de Serpientes. If you don't mind, can we start work? The trio had come in an extended cab truck dragging a full trailer packed with equipment, tools, and more guns than Tom was comfortable with knowing about. Natividad and Maritza got to work, and Father Cabral stood back, observing them. He explained, "We're using only the holy metals, gold, silver, lead, tin, copper, and iron, to reinforce what you already have. The edges, the blades, the spikes. Everything will be touched, everything will be coated, everything will be blessed. We will etch symbols, runes, and ancient words into the metal. When it is all complete, I will use holy water and a piece of the true cross to anoint their work." Behind his back, the cousins shared a look and a raised eyebrow. "Seriously?" his said. "Why not?" said hers. "You do not believe?" the priest asked them. "Padre, I'll take all the help I can get," Lurline said. "But, all things being honest, I've never been one for church going." "But you have encountered the snakes, you've encountered the dead, and worse. You fight against the forces of evil, and yet you do not believe in the forces of good?" "Sure I do, Padre. I'm surrounded by them right now. Let's just say I've never had a face-to-face with Jesus like I have with Earl Joe." Cabral nodded and turned to look her in the eye. "Come with me. I was asked to give you something." Outside the garage, he spoke in low tones. "Faith is important, Signora Stokes. If not faith in my Lord, then faith in something. You need to hold on to it. It gives you real power. You see my tattoo. Do you know what that means? There was a time I was the snake. I was in Sepheris Otrace. I studied under Magdalena Solis. I was a member of the Galakwa family, a devotee of Zipe Totec. And yet, I found the true way. I found peace. I found happiness. All of this came through the blood of my Redeemer, Jesus Christ. And yet, I have never had a face-to-face with him either. He transformed me through my faith. And now I do his work, albeit in mysterious ways." The priest took a metal case from the truck and opened it up. Inside was a strange-looking flamethrower with a backpack fuel tank. In faded letters, it was emblazoned with the words, "Blessing and a Curse." Once upon a time, there were a group of warriors called Nemesis. They're gone now, but some of their weaponry remains. This uses a combination of napalm and holy water. "Well, that should ought to help," she said appreciatively. But then, an idea sparked in her. "Father Cabral, while you're here, you think you could bless some water for me? Say 100 gallon or so. This weapon requires a fraction of that." "Oh no, it's not for this. It's for something else. Say, Tom! Tom! Do you know where we could find a working still?" And you know he surely fucking did. party kicked off at sundown. The work was finally complete. The car was done. Lurleen had test-driven it herself a half dozen times, making adjustments after every run. She'd been back in Bedford for just about 3 weeks now, and the time was finally upon her. At midnight, she was driving out to the Crooked Neck for one final showdown with Earl Joe. But before that, there was one thing she had to do. A party. She parked her kill car in the street in front of the garage. She left all the bay doors open. She played the greatest hits of Molly Hatchet at full blast and invited everyone to come have a drink. All the folks that worked on the car were there, plus a few dozen more. Gingerly, careful to avoid all the points and edges, Lurleen climbed atop her kill car with a clay jug of moonshine in her hands. She told the gathered throng, "I never gave two shits about thoughts and prayers. But now, tonight, seems like they might couldn't hurt none. So what I want everybody to do is have a drink. Have fun. Let's get some goddamn positivity going on around here, okay? That's what we got Earl Joe can never have. We have love. We have each other. And I don't know, that's a feeling we can rightly instill into a car. But we sure gonna try. With a little help from this right here." She took a sip from the jug. "This is the first moonshine ever made from 100% pure holy water. Dig in, folks." There were several jugs of holy shine in rotation. Everyone got nice and happy. For her part, Lurleen only took a few sips. For courage. She needed to keep her wits about her. Andy the Hobbit showed up late, but thankfully, he brought what she needed. After his exemplary work on the cowcatcher, Lurleen had given him Don Kresge's old sheriff's badge, asking him to turn it into a .22 caliber silver bullet. She loaded it into the squirrel gun and put on the skull-lined cowboy hat for a little extra luck. "You about ready?" Tom asked her, checking his watch. "Hell yes, I am." "You seem confident, don't you?"
"I don't seem it. I am it."
"Shit, I wish I was."
"What's your secret, Lurleen?"
"Call it magic, call it faith, call it whatever. It don't work unless you believe it. And Tommy, I fucking believe it. We did something special here, and it's gonna work. I got your back to the bitter end, baby cousin." They hugged, and then he followed her in his truck as she rumbled out of town and to the end of the Crooked Neck in her kill car, where Earl Joe was waiting for her. As Lurleen approached, he backed away and then turned around, easing back towards the edge of the road. His engine started revving. He wanted a race. Tom pulled up alongside her. "You stay here," she said. "I'm going to go, and I'm going to lead him back. And when I do, you hit him hard as you can. But no matter what, do not step foot onto the Crooked Neck. If you're out here, you're safe. If you're in there, you ain't."
Oh, Lurline, I'm safe no matter where I am. Is that so? Yep. Got myself a little faith. Yes, I do. What is it you have faith in, Tommy? He blew her a kiss through the window. Knock 'em dead, kid. I've got your six. Lurline pulled off the paved two-lane and onto the dirt track called Crooked Neck. She stopped side by side with the kill car, which, this close, reeked of sulfur strong enough to make her eyes water. Lurline cut her eyes and caught a glimpse of her rival. She saw Earl Joe lit up in dancing hellfire. One of his hands was fused to the steering wheel, growing into it, it growing into him, while the other was molded to the stick shift. Earl Joe's own guts were tied as his seat belt. He wasn't just driving the kill car. He was one with it. Lurline adjusted her squirrel skull hat, popped the clutch, and dropped the hammer. 1,200 horses hit the ground running, and she lurched up the road and into the first curve. She didn't have any rear views. They'd been removed along with all the other glass in the car. But she still had that lucky antique hand mirror. She risked a look back and saw the eyes of an infernal hellhound chewing up the dirt behind her and coming on fast. She swerved at the very last second and tapped the brakes so he would race past her and she could come up behind him. Which was easier said than done, because Earl Joe seized the lead and ran with it. He whipped around the next crooked turn, and by the time she had rounded it, he was ahead of her by a dozen car lengths. And that gap only widened. As he went into the next S-curve, he cut his lights, and the kill car went full dark. As Lurline entered the S-curve, she was blasted by a full array of high beams. Even though it didn't possibly have enough time to stop and turn around, here it was, the kill car coming dead on for her. Lights on high, engine roaring full throttle pandemonium. There was no time to avoid collision, but she could put a little English on it. Lurline angled the wheel just so and mashed down on the gas. The front driver's side of her cowcatcher hit his at a skidding 30-degree angle. The two metal frameworks rebounded off one another, snapping spikes from the kill car, and both vehicles went into tailspins. She came out facing Earl Joe's exposed flank and seized that temporary advantage. She smashed into the rear panel as Earl Joe barely managed to avoid taking full contact. Much to her satisfaction, the front of her car sliced through the side of his, like one of those Ginsu knives that Ron Popeil would use to saw through a soda can. She saw blood running down the side of the kill car, electric black in the moonlight. Lurline sideswiped him, and saw blade slashed against saw blade, throwing red sparks and broken teeth. Then she left him behind, heading back the way they had come in. Earl Joe was hot on her trail. And that old boy wasn't even limping yet. He started to bump her from behind, nudging her off the side of the road. she fought it out, bumping back, until they came into that last straightaway, where Tommy should have been waiting. Instead was a large gathering of the locals that had followed her from the party, exactly what she had told them not to fucking do. And Tom was the only one who wasn't there. She stopped hard, skidding to a stop sideways at the very edge of the dirt. The people screamed and backed away as the kill car surged towards Lurleen and T-boned her. She skidded sideways through the soft dirt and out onto the two lane. The locals that were standing too close got tossed, cut, dinged up, limbs snapped and saw blades nipped skin. The kill car laughed and backed away slowly. It gave Lurleen enough space to come back onto the field of play. Damn near sportsmanlike. That was when Tom Kendo Jr. stood up from behind a patch of brush alongside the dirt track. He was wearing the fuel backpack, loaded with napalm and holy water, and he unleashed righteous, holy fire upon the kill car. The metal sizzled and burned, white flames licking the wind 10 feet overhead. The engine whined and whinnied, screaming in pain. It turned away from Lurleen, backing up and going hard left to spin around and clip Tom from the side. At the very last second, he tried to dive out of the way, but he was just a hair too slow. And one of the longer spikes attached to the side clipped Tom's ribcage. He staggered to his feet, and now the kill car was coming around again, eager to finish him off. Lurleen attacked, crunching into his front shotgun side, right next to the wheel well. The sharpened, reinforced, blessed edge of the cow catcher did its work, opening up that wheel well, collapsing it, shredding the tire, and snapping the axle in the process. This close, the napalm flames were scorching Lurleen's arm hairs, making the skin of her face pull tight across her skull. She dropped reverse and backed away, pulling with her scraps of twisted, burning metal. The heat receded. Then she said, "Aw, to hell with it." She laid her seat back into a full recline before jumping ahead, full throttle, and hitting the kill car again in damn near the exact same spot. She dug in deeper this time, cutting into the guts of the beast. Clotted engine oil spurted, and soupy, rancid fuel spilled and spattered. There was a belch of toxic fumes and acid smoke as the engine started to gasp for its dying breaths. The headlights started to dim. The kill car tried to pull away, but Lurleen was wedged in too far. Finally, the napalm flame started to die down. Lurleen got out of the car, holding that lucky squirrel gun. It was only a .22, and she only had the one bullet. But thanks to Andy the Hobbit, it was made of the silver from Sheriff Don Kresge's badge. She stepped up to the driver's side door of the kill car, crumpled and bent. Earl Joe's sloping, gawking face stared back at her. She couldn't tell if he was scared or grateful. She didn't rightly care. Should have stayed off my road, you sorry sack of shit, she said, and shot him in the head. Then she got back behind the wheel and pulled her car free. She looked at Tom and said, Fire away, cousin. Hit him with everything you got. Tom unleashed the cleansing fluid of flame towards the interior of the kill car. Earl Joe sizzled and screamed. The light fluttered and went dark. The engine wheezed its last gasp. Tom dropped the empty fuel tank. He stood next to Lurline, lit up festive orange and white from the conflagration, the only sound being the crackle of flames and the bubbling of liquefied fat. After a few minutes, Tom went ahead and said it. Think he's really dead? Well, let's hope so, because if he ain't, I surely don't know what else to try. You think we can get out of here? I think we should sit and watch till the sun comes up, just in case. Why? What else you got to do? He showed her his bloody side. Got a little nick here. I count 3 broken ribs, and one of them might be poking out the skin, but I'm afraid to look. Shit. Yeah, I suppose we should get you checked out, if you want to be a pussy about it. They both laughed, and then he coughed and spit blood and clutched his side. Don't make me laugh. They half walked, half staggered back to his truck at the end of the dirt road. Lurline could come back tomorrow in the light of day to pick up the pieces. God willing, they were still there. In any sane world, the man thrice killed would stay still. But this wasn't the sane world. It was the Crooked Neck, and things worked differently here. Besides, Earl Joe Hendershot had made a deal. He wheezed and rasped. He inched forward. The car was crippled, barely able to crawl. Still, he pushed through it. Man and machine, his crispy fried skin crunching with every move he made. The passenger door slammed closed, and a man in a long coat and a wide-brimmed hat sat down on the scorched leather of the shotgun seat. Howdy, Earl Joe, said the southern gentleman. It's been a while, hadn't it? Say, you think you got one more ride in you? Thank you for listening to another episode of A Scary Home Companion. If you'd like to hear more of these amazing characters, you can dig through the stacks. Check out Hellbound and Down, My Life with the Kill Car Cult, Fiends in Low Places, The Haunting of Crooked Neck, The Girl Who Loves Stephen King, Drive Like Hell, and many more.
Interact with the show on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Reddit. But please, be nice. It's been a heck of a week. And on that note, here's the place where I always pitch you guys about joining the Patreon. Does that sound familiar? Not this time. This time, I'm offering all of you, everybody listening, a free bonus Patreon exclusive episode. For a limited time only. You see, recently one of my oldest friends passed away unexpectedly. It was tough. Mark was a patron, but more importantly, a friend for over 16 years. I was going to do something sappy, and then I realized that Mark would have hated that. So instead, I wrote and recorded a special tribute episode in his honor, a kick-ass action thriller about soldiers versus deranged cultists set to killer music. He would have loved it. And so this episode, The Church of the Barbed Wire Man, is available right now for free on the Patreon page. No membership or signing up or credit card required. Just go give it a listen and enjoy. Patreon/A Scary Home Companion. I can't overstate the importance of music in this episode. It was stellar and cinematic. Kristen Hirsch provided the song Crooked, and my boy Beat Mechanic blessed us with Sinner, One More, Ma and Pa, and Harley Davidson. All of this music and tons more is available at Free Music Archive.